Hi, before we get started on today's show, I wanted to share with you an opportunity to get face-to-face with a number of the most popular Run-As guests, including Jeffrey Snover, Mark Manassi, and Paul Thurrott at the IT Edge Intersection Conference, October 25th to 28th at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. At the conference, you'll get to see folks like Mark Manassi, who will be doing his usual amazing job of helping you understand what Microsoft is up to with his new session on Server 2016, talking about what's awesome, what's irritating, what's improved, and what's expensive. Mark's been writing Mastering Windows Servers books now for over 20 years, and he's got some great advice that can help you get put to work immediately. Register today at itedgeintersection.com. We'll see you there.
From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 499, Mobile Application Management Policies with guest Mike Crowley. Recorded Monday, October 10th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, another one of our special Monday series, sponsored by Atlassian Jira Service Desk. And I have back to the show Mike Crowley, who started his career in information technology after serving in the Marine Corps, but these days is now the principal consultant at Baseline Technologies. Last time he was on the show, the only time he was on the show, back in 2011, so entirely too long, sir. Welcome back.
Thanks, Richard. Glad to be here.
And good to have you, too. You know, we've been dealing with this evolving landscape around enterprise mobility. Everybody has a phone, and now as IT people, we're expected to manage them. Not a small problem, I feel like we're in a tidal wave of information and ideas on how to deal with this. And I appreciate your thoughts on just trying to tame this beast, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We've seen a big shift from all these products around the configuration management space that refers to getting Windows desktops exactly how you want them.
Yep.
So that whole industry has pretty much pivoted to mobile device management. In fact, I think Gartner even dropped the desktop configuration management from the things that they review now, and they really are focusing on the device side of the world, I guess. And more things are starting to look like devices, even Windows 10, as we all have started to adopt that, really is treated as a device more so than it's been a traditional desktop.
Yeah, they've kind of just broadened that landscape. It's, you know, I've always been annoyed at the whole the PC is dying or the PC is dead mindset. It's like, what's more personal than the computer you keep in your pocket that's perpetually threatening to give you cancer? Like, that's about as personal as you get for a personal computer. So, and from an IT perspective, it's like, you just have to manage these things. Although we have this bring your own device problem. Although I feel like we did a show a while back with Simon May, and he talked about this idea of being able to insert corporate data and corporate secrets onto somebody's phone, and also being able to deny them and remove them when they leave or for whatever reason. So, you know, I've never been a fan of bring your own device. I thought from an economics perspective, it is cheaper to hand them a second device and say, here, this is the business device. We control this device. Your stuff is on here. Use your phone your way. But Simon sort of swayed me that it's feasible for us to just insert the right amount of information onto somebody else's device and still have sufficient control over it without dominating the device.
Yeah, I think back in the day where we really could only define an endpoint as a workstation, and
right.
Certain environments or secured environments, maybe you would have certificates on that workstation, or you would know the IP address or something. You would build this relationship either through a VPN or through your firewall to say, this device is okay, but other devices are not okay.
Right.
And people are starting to carry these phones in their pockets or wherever else, and that's really what they want to use. And even the organizations that do have some folks carrying two phones, it's obviously not a fun thing to have to do, and people are looking for ways to use the hardware they already have and the familiar experience they already have.
Yeah.
And I think the technology now allows us to more articulately define what it is that we're trying to protect, instead of just saying these two kind of generic endpoints. We can now get a little bit more specific.
And it helps that Microsoft now has put Word on every kind of smart device and so on, so that we do not have a subset so much of smartphones anymore. They're most of the smartphones now support all this stuff, so we can actually make it work. I just think that folks are still confused about the role of Intune in all this, because at the surface, it's like, well, this is cloud-based configuration management and virus scanning. I don't think about it from a mobile device perspective.
Right. And to add some confusion on top of that is, how do I even go about acquiring it? So
sure.
Windows Intune is Microsoft Intune. And that's actually an important point here, is that Microsoft's sort of removing the specific monikers, and it's becoming a more of a cloud or a Microsoft product. So it's now Microsoft Intune is Microsoft's mobile device management play. I think you're right in that the early days of Intune, we saw it as a cloud-based SCCM or a yep. cloud-based configuration manager. And for Windows 7 and earlier devices, it did have a little bit of traction there, where you can actually push out antivirus and you can push out software titles and things. You would get 20 gigs of space to upload your packages and distribute them over the internet. And a couple things took place, I think, that prevented that from really going all the way through to fruition. And that is, number one, doing the things that SCCM can do tend to be bandwidth intensive. So,
yeah.
for example, pushing large software titles or doing imaging. And even though some of us are getting faster and faster internet connections, it's still really not at the parity that a LAN or a normal intranet topology would look like. So I think Microsoft realized that. At the same time, the other thing is, as I said earlier, this traction with devices taking off in this mobile device management space that you have a lot of big players in. And Microsoft actually was, I think, a little bit slow to that space and getting getting their products out there. In fact, most of the work that I have done where people are looking at Intune for an MDM play are people who have actually already got something in that space. And they're evaluating Microsoft's answer to that. But because they had a requirement early on, they were using another technology. And so I think you have sort of two herds of people that are starting to look at Intune. You have the folks that are maybe hoping for something cheaper and more integrated because sure. they have Microsoft's purchase already. Or you have people that maybe wouldn't have even considered MDM, but they're starting to see material around it and integration into things they already have, like Office 365.
I don't disagree they relate to the game. I think the first serious enterprise mobility management suite I ever looked at was IBM's Mass 360, which I think was an acquired product. But to me, it sort of set the bar for what it looked like to really manage devices, if I felt a bit of a heavy-handed product.
Right. I think Microsoft is kind of consistent in how they solve a lot of these types of problems, where you might have a product that does X, and Microsoft doesn't have an exact product that does X, but they got these 9 different titles that together do X, and you've already purchased 3 or 8 of them anyway,
yeah.
so you might as well. And it's kind of difficult to compare things from an apples-to-apples perspective. For example, as we talk about Intune, we'll see that some of the things that Intune does really are more tied to something like Azure Active Directory.
Right.
They benefit Intune, but it's sort of a different SKU. And you almost thought this was going to be solved by cloud. You thought that, oh, well, now it's just a light switch. I don't have to worry about all these different software titles. But certainly within the Microsoft portfolio, we're definitely seeing lots and lots of different things that can be purchased to license users and ultimately offer technology. But again, it's still kind of murky as to how to acquire some of these things. And if you see a feature on a data sheet, how do I get that feature in my environment? And how much do I have to pay, or what is the process to go about it? And I think Intune is probably most commonly acquired in what's called the Enterprise Mobility Suite, which
yep.
is a bundle that includes the Intune product as part of EMS. You also have Azure Rights Management, and then you have the Azure Active Directory Premium.
Right.
So those three items are bundled in EMS, but you could also get the Intune directly, and there's other bundles as well that Microsoft is advertising this year. The Enterprise Cloud Suite, or the ECS, is another one that's mm-hmm. that's getting some traction.
And you listed it last, but it seems to me that identity is a strong suit for Microsoft, that this is a piece they kind of know well, and that we are already likely using some portion of it, nothing less than Active Directory. And it seems like the linchpin. You need this first before pretty much anything else works effectively.
Yeah, I think in your last event, we were just talking about the show with Simon, mm-hmm. where he made a quote, and actually, I think I tweeted it out as well. It was, identity is the new perimeter. So whereas right. before we had talked about this really static configuration between devices, the end game here is to really make sure that the data is restricted to individual people. And so by having a way to identify them and having a strong identity and access management framework around the people, obviously, I think that's where we all want to be.
And it just sort of acknowledges the reality. When you're trying to use smartphones in that traditional static perimeter way, you're now basically asking a smartphone to VPN into the network so that they basically have a context with the network, which of course requires identity just to get in the first place. But cellular networks and VPNs do not live happily together. It's very painful.
Yeah, and I think that's just really not the spirit of mobile phones. I don't think this layered approach and highly customized and locked down approach really going to work. The APIs are going to be very different depending on which phone you get. Unlike mm-hmm. Windows 7 sort of being a ubiquitous platform, you have so many different capabilities with different devices, and it's really hard to try to continue to use the wheel in that way. So I think reinventing the wheel a little bit and going more after securing resources based on identity is definitely the way to go. And it's much more lasting, I think.
I guess one of the questions when you talk about the identity side of this equation is, what is my commitment as somebody operating some infrastructure to get that relationship working? Because if you looked at it in the early days with ADFS and so forth, you were like, that's too difficult.
Right. Yeah. Microsoft's tried a couple different ways to make ADFS easier, including one with vocabulary. They now call Azure AD Connect, the installation tool that installs synchronization. That's also sort of installing ADFS if you choose for it to in the background. But I agree, ADFS is pretty complicated, especially for the customer who's really trying to get to the cloud and not have all this complicated on-premises infrastructure. So at Ignite 2 weeks ago, Microsoft announced a different type of authentication that you can use with Azure AD Connect, where it's more seamless than the password sync has been. So that's probably one way to go. Mm-hmm. But I think most organizations, as you mentioned earlier, probably do have an Active Directory, and they would start by synchronizing that Active Directory to Office 365 or maybe just directly to Azure for something like mobile device management.
Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? How much work is that?
I don't think it's too hard. The Azure Active Directory Connect tool will pretty much next finish and be done unless you have a complex environment. And by complex environment, I typically mean where you have perhaps multiple Active Directory forests,
right,
or where you don't use Active Directory as your primary identity provider. Maybe you're an educational institution that's been around forever and you use something else. So, you know, those scenarios can get a little bit sticky, but getting Azure Active Directory Connect installed on a server that synchronizes your Active Directory with Azure is the first step. And what that will do is enable you to then use other things that Microsoft has in the cloud, whether it's Azure infrastructure, you know, building virtual machines and things can actually tie into the Azure Active Directory element. You can also do Office 365, which relies on Azure Active Directory. You can do this Intune stuff we're talking about. There's CRM. There's other products that are all going to bolt into that identity provider of Azure Active Directory. And so what some people are doing is actually, instead of having that on-premises Active Directory be the hub of their identity, Microsoft's trying to encourage folks, and many are adopting it, to take the Azure Active Directory instance as the hub. And you can actually bolt on things directly to that instead of deploy your own ADFS server or build these trust relationships with SAML and other complicated protocols. You can pick things out of the Azure Active Directory marketplace and say, boom, I want to have single sign-on with Salesforce. And it has a lot of automation around that. And that's sort of what cloud's all about, is taking out the mechanics and giving you more of a light switch.
And I really like this idea of being able to manage the identities agnostic to the users. My biggest one is Salesforce accounts to salespeople, because salespeople seem to turn over fairly regularly. So the fact that I can manage the ownership of all the Salesforce accounts and assign them to salespeople without them actually knowing that account, it's their account with the company, not with Salesforce. Just that seems right to me. Like, that's the right thing to do. And it means when they leave, you don't have any complexity there. Like, it's just, when you shut it off, they're shut off.
Right. A definite transition to user-based IT instead of the traditional device-based IT.
Right. Yeah. Or even role. All right. I think we've hammered on the identity side of this fairly well. Let's dig into some of the more policy aspects of this.
Yeah. So Intune is, as we mentioned, has its roots in a configuration management competitor, but it's really not that. I think the way that we're trying to focus now is more on protecting the contents of your organization, whatever the documents are or the resources that you have.
Which I think this is where I think it's distinctive, right? It's like, I'm not going to take command of the device and control all these things. I'm just the stuff you're going to put on it is the only thing I'm restricting.
Right, right. And this is true, obviously, in a BYOD scenario where I don't want to completely regulate a device that an employee bought for their own purposes and has their kids' pictures and all that kind of stuff on
right.
it. But it also is just a lot simpler, actually, I think, to protect the content instead of to try to think of every single scenario to lock down a device. It's always funny when I go to an environment that, you know, you log in and there's these pop-ups of login scripts taking place really quickly. And it says the command prompt is disabled and this is disabled. Yet it only takes a high school kid like an extra 15 minutes to figure out ways to get in and override those lockdown controls anyway.
It's totally true.
Whereas if you think about it differently and you think, I don't need to worry about locking this device down because this device can just get thrown in the trash and I'm done with it. As long as I'm able to protect access to my resources, and if somebody's able to take those resources like a Word document and put it on their device to make sure that protections travel with that content, then I don't really care. I don't care if somebody, you know, figured out how to install Doom on their work computer, or, you know, even if they sold a computer with sensitive information on eBay, it doesn't really matter because all of it's encrypted and protected in other ways. And so the hardware, you know, loss of hardware is what it is. But as far as IT is concerned, I don't think they're really worried about.
Yeah. From an InfoSec perspective, we're good.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
So Windows Intune, or again, Microsoft Intune, has lots of different types of policies. You have compliance policies that can control things that are sort of, I would say, traditional here in the sense that ActiveSync has been a way to do it in the past, where maybe we don't allow the camera or we don't allow phones without pins or things like that. You can also have mobile device security policies where it's sort of an extension of the ActiveSync policies, but it can go into a lot more detail. It can require encryption and do a lot of deeper integration with the device. But then we also have a kind of a new area called mobile application management policies. And mobile application management policies, unlike the other policies that are sort of blanketed to groups of users, MAM policies are targeted to applications, and then those applications are pushed out. So what this means is that I can have an application like the Outlook app be distributed to the users, but that app will come along, or the policies will come along with that app and control the behavior of that app. So again, to kind of compare and contrast here, many moons ago, we would say, well, if you want to connect to ActiveSync, then we have to own this whole device and we have to turn your camera off and we have to do all these different things. Whereas now we can say, if you want to have Outlook, you can have the Outlook app. And if you want to connect to our environment, you can do that. But as it relates to that connection, we're going to control certain gates or certain aspects of that connection. So, for example, you can check your email all day long, but you're not able to download attachments and save them to your device because that's beyond the boundaries of our control.
Right.
And, you know, we want to make sure we're protecting that content. So this is a really different way to secure mobile devices. You know, we don't have to take ownership, even more extreme in the computer side where you're taking ownership of a whole PC. You don't even have to take control of the device. We don't have to control all the different areas that, again, a high school kid could probably find exploits for. Jailbroken devices could possibly undermine some of your efforts. We're now really encrypting and protecting the content, and we're able to do it at an app level, and in some cases, even at an account level. So again, with the Outlook example, I have a work account and I have a personal account, and I use the Outlook app for my Android. But I have work policies in my MAM policy. Mm-hmm. I have rules that say that I'm not allowed to take content out of the attachments of one account and put them into another account. That's even within one app. So I think that's a really several steps.
Nicely granular.
Yeah, several steps towards the goal here in terms of protecting the content and not doing it in a really intrusive way.
Absolutely. Hey, Mike, give me 1 second here to pay the bills, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Atlassian, makers of Jira Service Desk. Jira Service Desk is the new service management software that IT teams will love to use. Built on the Jira platform, Jira Service Desk helps you deliver cheerful service, is simple to set up, and so affordable you won't even need your boss's approval. Try it free today and get a free t-shirt if you're one of the first 100 listeners to sign up at Atlassian.com/runasradio. So I love the fact that we're now down this nice granular level and it's individual files. But then so this, so the, if I've got a Word doc that you're going to pull onto your phone so that you can read it, and it's corporate secrets inside that dock. The dock itself is encrypted, and you need word with the policies to be able to decrypt it?
Right. So this goes back to the other comment about comparing apples and oranges. Microsoft's approach to some of these technologies may span more than one subscription.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, if we're talking about Enterprise Mobility Suite, which includes the Azure Active Directory that's holding your identity, your usernames, and then you have the Intune component, which has all this policy framework around it.
Right.
What you've just described is the third leg, which is the rights management component. And okay. They all play really well together, but on a billing sheet or on a subscription spreadsheet, it looks a lot different because they are brought to you by different technical products on the back end. But yes, the way this works is you can put a wrapper around an individual file, and that can be done manually by a user clicking a template from their product or Outlook product or their Word or Excel or PowerPoint, or a policy can automatically apply a template. And that protects that content with RMS, or Rights Management Service, which is a feature provided by Azure. And that means that content is actually encrypted. And it's not relying on something like BitLocker or the whole disk being encrypted or your Windows passwords. It means that file itself is encrypted. And so if you were to take that file and try to open it with OpenOffice, or if you were to try to open it with a hex editor or Notepad or something like that, it would be as encrypted as any other encrypted content is out there. It's not like you can bypass these protections simply by avoiding the Word application. However, Word can read this header and understand that it is encrypted, and then it pulls the RMS server into the conversation and makes sure that you do have access, and it can decrypt it for you. And that's true on the desktop versions of Office as well as the mobile device versions.
You know, it's funny, as 5 years ago when we did the last show with you, we were talking about rights management into email, into Exchange.
Right.
You haven't strayed far, have you?
No, it's ironically a narrow path here, I guess. But yeah. I mean, it's still a hot topic. I think maybe that was a little bit early back in 2011.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of people ready to adopt something like RMS. I think now, though, it's maybe not known by that name, but people want these types of protection
Sure.
we're describing. And so,
and I just like this idea that when the kid bypasses Word and gets to the files in the phone, the files are encrypted. Good luck. Like, you need that app, and its decryption capabilities are tied to the rights management part of it. So you kind of have to play the whole game to be able to get to that file.
Right. And I think it's important. So there's sort of two tangential points here. One is that this is not just limited to Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. This is something that Microsoft has baked into all of their mobile apps on the various different stores and marketplaces. But it's also something that Microsoft has several partners, and there's actually a website you can go to. You can look at all the Intune application partners, and these are folks that have baked into their own applications these types of protections so that you can benefit from these protections outside of simply using a Microsoft product. I'm looking at the page now. There's PDF viewers, there's Box, there's Lookout, and other things in this application partners marketplace. And then if there's not something in there, you at a final option, there's an SDK available where you can actually have your developer wrap an application and add these protections or add these capabilities to really any app. So it's not something you have to get Microsoft apps
right.
for. And so that's sort of a segue into the other point, which is a lot of the MDM platforms out there have similar protections, but to realize those protections, you have to use all of their apps. And so I think this is somewhat true in the sense that Microsoft's, you know, encouraging you to use their own apps.
Sure.
But A, you don't have to. And B, they're probably the apps that you would prefer to use anyway.
Well, especially when we talk about the Office suite. But I mean, the big one for me would be PDFs. They're yeah. everywhere.
Right. Yep. So you can read PDFs inside of the Word product. But if mm-hmm. you choose not to do that, there's other platforms out there. Adobe Reader actually has integration into RMS, and there's our mobile-based PDF readers as well on that marketplace I mentioned.
Nice. So there are a bunch of third-party products out there, plus your devs internally with their custom apps that are going to the mobile device can be compliant as well.
Right. Yep. And you're not forced to use kind of a generic or a vanilla MDM app. So, you know, the MDM Word viewer that may come with another product or another platform out there probably was built with security in mind and not usability in mind. Whereas I think the Microsoft Office apps that are out there, and obviously like things like Adobe Reader, those are really adding security into what's already a successful product,
right.
a product that people like and use.
And these pieces seem to go together so nicely. I'm thinking about other aspects. Like if you're using your phone to gather photos that are work related, how do I do that and somehow get them tied into this MDM set?
Well, as it relates to photos, I think it might have to do with where those are ultimately going to be stored.
Right.
So the protections are typically in the front of the various different server platforms or server workloads. So, for example, if I'm interacting with email, then the conversation needs to talk about usually Exchange. And that could be Exchange on premises, or that could be Exchange online as part of Office 365. For things like file storage, you could be using perhaps, you know, a third party like Box, in which case Box has a fully Intune aware, RMS aware app that you can use. Or if you are using Office 365, files would probably go into your OneDrive or would probably go into a SharePoint document library. And in those cases, there are specific tie-ins to that platform. So when you're setting up the Intune relationship on a mobile device, you can do it either by going and downloading what's called the company portal app. That's kind of like the agent, although it's not truly an agent in all cases. But you enroll your device through this company portal app, and then that can provide secure access or secure pathways to the different targets. So in this case, SharePoint Online.
Right.
And SharePoint Online can have rules that say, I'm not going to let people access it unless you're enrolled in a device policy or unless you satisfy these requirements. And that concept is called conditional access. So SharePoint has protections that sit in front of it. And this is SharePoint Online or on premises that sits in front of it and says, these are the conditions. And one of the conditions is typically you are enrolled in the MDM policy and all these things are true. And only if you satisfy these conditions do I allow you access to whatever the resource is.
Wow.
And so back to the pictures, if you're uploading all your pictures to a shared document library, then that would be a scenario in which SharePoint would not allow access unless you first satisfy all these rules. And those rules can be simple things like your phone requires a PIN, and that might be it.
Right.
Or maybe it requires a whole lot more where the pictures are protected and the phone's protected and stuff is stored within a particular app and it's not allowed to leave that app. It sort of depends on the scenario. But
right. So, I mean, you could go as far as there's a third-party app you need to install on your phone that is involved in controlling your camera to take the pictures, and that's able to write up to SharePoint, as opposed to you're just using the normal photo viewer in your phone, and you want to be able to upload the pictures. But both would work.
True. And I should also point out there is a protected sharing app. So if you have some sort of generic content, and I don't think I want to say photos are generic content,
right,
since they're pretty much a primary use for phones these days.
Yeah.
But if you do have a sort of a generic file, you know, some random file, you can wrap these. There's protector programs that can wrap it. And there's also some apps that the names escape me at the moment, but there's a few apps that are out there that are part of this Intune stack, so to speak, that can provide those protections for you. And then you get a different file extension that is read by RMS aware readers on the other end. So whether it's, you know, your Office products or the sharing app itself, as I mentioned, the sharing app sort of handles the generic content that's not otherwise called out.
And is it actually encrypting the file before it uploads it or anything like that when it's a generic sharing app?
Yes. Yeah, so the sharing app does provide a wrapper of encryption similar to the Word document we mentioned.
Right.
And then it requires something that's aware of that to disassemble that or to decrypt it on the receiving side.
And I'm excited about this because it opens the door to a whole conversation about using people's devices like this and not insisting they always work through a common app set unless you really want to. Like normally the overhead of that is substantial. You're like, why can't we just use the normal photo viewer and the normal photo taker and other resources that are built into the phone? Why do I have to write my own just to provide some sense of security? So the fact that I could sort of stick on to existing software not have to own it, not have to write it, that lends a lot of utility here. That's actually a really efficient way to still have secure communications with head office and take advantage of the phone as an extension of the office.
Yeah, I will say that your control as an IT admin is going to be limited in that type of scenario. But as you mentioned, sometimes it's great that it's just possible to do.
Right.
So, for example, if we want to go in and very finely control all the different things that Outlook can do, that's fine. We have lots of controls around that. But if we then say, well, I want to just let people use whatever mail client happens to be on their device, that can be controlled as well.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit in the opposite direction of, I think, where Microsoft is trying to go. And they do want you using some of these apps or at least having their wrapper around these apps.
Yeah.
If you do just get a generic picture from your digital SLR and you've dropped it onto an SD card on your phone or something like that, there are catch-alls, and there are mechanisms to protect that. Mm-hmm. But I think those should be edge cases more so than they are something you'd really want to try to build a solution around.
But still giving you more options than thou shalt build the all-encompassing app and control the phone, essentially, when they're going to do that kind of work. I mean, I totally appreciate the idea that, especially in the case of email, like you're setting up a business account anyway. You could probably insist on a certain app for that. But this mindset that we're getting to now of, rather than give you custom devices in the field, you are able to use a smartphone because it is such a good camera and a good GPS unit and a decent audio recorder. Like you can do a lot of capture in the field with that device, but can't, you know, I've seen plenty of options where there are insecure ways to do all those things. But in order to get it secure, you ended up with this very ham-fisted, we must do all the things. So the fact that we could sort of pick and choose the best stuff that's already out there and still have a secure approach, I think it's more complicated, but ultimately cost-effective, rewarding if you can get it right.
Yeah, I think definitely meeting the users where they are is the way to win at this. Mm-hmm, if you try to change them and back to whether you're giving them a second device that they don't want to carry or whether you're making them install apps that they don't want to have installed, it's possibly a step in the right direction, but it's still not what we want, and that is to really just make the data or the content itself secure and be more free and let people control.
I mean, at the same time, we're still basically insisting they have a PIN, which I feel is very reasonable, but, you know, I have my days where I put a tinfoil hat on too, right? I'm security-centric enough to be concerned about lots of things. There's lots of folks out there that hate they have to have a PIN.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it seems like an obvious thing to me.
Yes.
And I've also read a lot of stuff in the media about certain legal expectations of privacy in the states, mm-hmm. where if you don't have a PIN, some judges in some jurisdictions might believe that means that you don't have an expectation of privacy. And as crazy as that sounds to, I think, you and I, it is the way that it is. I mean, there's cases being won and lost based on this. So I think having a PIN is a pretty, you know, expected thing these days. But definitely, you know, there's folks out there that say it's their device and you're not going to put my policies on my device, and that's fine. And in those cases, back to the story about the custom apps, we can say, fine, you don't need a whole device PIN. You just have a PIN every time you open Outlook.
Right.
And, you know, that maybe is satisfying.
Is that better?
Again,
Or we give you another device, but it'll have a PIN on it. I dealt with an angry customer as a third-party consultant coming in. It wasn't an angry customer, but angry employees within the organization that were thinking IT was spying on their devices.
Right.
You know, they got to that place. There's a variety of reasons. I don't believe they were. They said they weren't. And as you go around a couple of times, after a while, I'm like, you know, for what you're paying me to spend a week with you guys on this, you could go buy a set of phones and control them completely and go, fine, here's your work phone. Presume we're spying on you from it. We'll leave your phone alone. But, you know, there's very much a personal personality aspect to this. That you've just got to find a way through one way or the other. And it's funny how often sometimes just creating that separate physical representation, another phone, solves that problem. But
right,
like we've spent a solid half hour here, Mike, just starting, and I still feel like we're skimming the surface of just starting to dig into what is possible here. I don't know that I could have this conversation with the average corporate user to say, here's how I'm going to be working within your device, so don't worry. And I don't know that actually works out that way. I feel like we're doing the right thing with the right kind of policies. Like this to me is something I could live with in a bring your own device environment. I feel like we're doing the right thing. We're protecting the data and being minimally intrusive, but it is not a trivial process and it's not a simple thing to explain.
Something you hit on. One of the things to point out when you enroll a device, I actually did this before our call today just to make sure I was aware of the absolute latest things that the service is doing,
right?
Because it does change frequently. But there's actually a screen. I think I have a picture of it where it says, hey, we care about your privacy. Here's what this enrollment means. We can look at the device's serial number. We can look at the operating system and all this kind of stuff. But then there's a whole other section that says IT cannot see this on your device. Now, I suppose, you know, your tinfoil hat audience will maybe distrust even that screen,
right?
But it addresses the problem, right? And that problem is that, hey, I bought this phone at Best Buy myself. It's mine. You don't get to do all these things on
right.
it. And you don't get to look at what I choose to do in my spare time on my personal device. And so it gives you a little bit of warm and fuzzy, but definitely it's good to have options in your tool belt.
It's nice to make that visible. I think that was very wise, because most of the time when you're talking about rights around apps on phones, it's only going to say, this is what I want. It never talks about, this is what I'm not going to do. So I'm glad that they did that. That's very smart. You know, it's one other step. Hey, Mike, you've been paying attention to Ignite, as you said earlier. Was there anything you saw on MAM that you really liked that folks should check out?
Yeah, Ignite definitely has a plethora of content that I've been doing my best to follow, and it's in a few different spaces, so it's been tough to do that.
It's overwhelming. I mean, there were thousands of sessions, just overwhelming.
Yeah, I definitely won't be able to get through all of them, but I am certainly making use of the YouTube 1.5 and play two times fast feature, so I can try to soak in as much as I can. So there were two sessions that I think were really related to what we've talked about today. One is called See What's New in Application Management with Microsoft Intune, and that's on YouTube. And there is a video that goes with that that's a little bit longer, or a video that goes with that same topic, and that's called Secure Access to Office 365, SaaS, and On-Premises Apps and Files with Azure AD and Intune. And that one's a little bit longer. It goes into probably more of what the technical implementer would need to see. But in terms of seeing the features and seeing where the product is at today, the first one would be where you'd want to start.
That's awesome. And thanks for that. But I am also just trying to sort all this out. So I appreciate leading me to a couple of key ones. Fun conversation, sir. Thank you so much for giving me the time to really dig into more of the meat around this enterprise mobility suite.
Thanks, Richard. I'll catch you later.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.